know your name, I swear I do. It's on the tip of my tongue. Sorry, what did you say? I've known you for how long? Your face is so familiar, but no name comes to mind. Please, can you remind me? Staring out into space, asking God to hear my case. Trying to think of all things past. How long will my memory last?
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I am your host and founder of Alzheimer's Speaks, Lori LeBay. My mother also had dementia for 30 years, and so I created Alzheimer's Speaks to create an advocacy company that provides multiple platforms to shift our dementia care culture from crisis to comfort around the world, and to try to help connect people to all of the products, services, and tools that are available to us that we just didn't know about before. We are also known as a company that helps people expand their brands through our media outlets and enlarge their footprint so that, again, people can find the resources that they need. So if you are a business out there who is trying to help those who are caring for someone with dementia or is living with dementia, please, please reach out to me. I would love to talk to you. Before I introduce our guests, I always like to give a couple of shout-outs and, of course, always thank our audience. I think gratitude is the attitude we all need to have, and I so appreciate our listeners. They share, like, and just push these shows out to others in need, and I am just truly grateful for that. And because of that, it helped us get recognized by Oprah as a health hero, Maria Shriver as an architect of change, and Dr. Oz as the number one influencer for Alzheimer's. And again, those accolades, you know, are shared with all of you because I truly do believe that this is a team effort. And I believe it's the only way that we're going to win this battle is to really work together. If you're new and you're wondering who all we interview, and maybe you could be next, because we interview everyone who has been touched by dementia. Those that are actually diagnosed, those caring for them, business professionals who are providing services, products, and tools. We've had authors, we've had researchers, we've had movie makers, we've had advocates for various causes. We just want to connect everybody and hopefully inspire them to get involved. And speaking of inspirational, I want to do a little promo for the Silver Dawn Training Institute. They really work at caring for persons with dementia and bringing a unique set of challenges, and they help people overcome that. Silver Dawn Training Institute equips professionals and loved ones both with a new way of communicating with these individuals in what they call their introspective improv. Their approach is unscripted, unconventional, and unapologetic. They deal with real-life scenarios and consider your and your patients or loved ones' advantage points. Their training is based on the company founders' experience in long-term care, and I'm really excited because they're coming to Minnesota in White Bear Lake August 6th and 7th, and they would love for you to join them to become a certified dementia communication specialist in their training program. And you can go ahead and register at www.cdcsdementiaraw.com. That's cdcsdementiaraw.com. And I personally am going to try to go to that one. They also have lots of other trainings that you can go to as well. And then there, of course, is Maria Shriver's Move for Minds, which is happening throughout June in various cities. And if you haven't checked that out, please go to her main website, the Women's Alzheimer's Movement Organization, because there you will find all kinds of different information, but you'll be able to get to the Move for Minds events as well. And the last I'm going to mention is the Roberto app, which is a resource that measures your brain function, and they do that through video interaction, and it is really cool, and it is very helpful. And you can just go to my site, alzheimerspeaks.com, and you'll see a big tab for them on the right-hand side. Go ahead and click on that, and you'll see that there's a little promo code, too, so you can get an extended free trial of that. So with no further ado, I am going to go ahead and introduce our guest today, who I am very excited to have on our show. She's been with us prior, and we are going to be talking about long-distance caregiving, both the struggles and the gifts wrapped in that journey. Lisa Hirsch, like many, has a mother who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and their 14-year journey with illness transformed their relationship. And so she's going to talk about that today. Her love and admiration for her mother grew each and every day as she listened and watched her mother become her true hero. So welcome, Lisa. I am just so thrilled to have you on the show today. How are you?
I'm great, Lori, and I feel honored to be a guest on your show because I have such admiration and respect for you. So thank you for everything that you do to bring awareness to this disease. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I was lucky enough to meet Lisa when I was out in New York, and she was so gracious, invited me into her home, and we just had a wonderful conversation, and she just has this true open heart and is just full of compassion and love and really purpose for the cause. And so I think our souls kind of ignited together there, walking hand in hand and trying to improve this world and make life easier for everyone with dementia. Now, Lisa, as I said in your intro, your mom has dementia, and you guys have been on this 14-year journey with that. Is there anything right now that you'd like to give as a little bit of background to our audience about your relationship with your mom? Before
sure.
She got Alzheimer's, and okay.
Yeah, it's there is a silver lining. So my mother and I, my mother, I loved her, she's my mother, and we fought, we clashed, maybe in a strange way because some ways we might have been similar, and I loved her. Lori, I might have wanted your mother to be my mother. Growing up, I had a really dear friend I wanted her mother to be my mother. And so our relationship, we were close. We were then distant, mother-daughter. I mean, I always thought mothers and daughters were so close and like best friends, which is what I thought I would see around me. And since then, I've actually learned there are other women out there like myself that have relationships with their mother that are not mother is their best friend, which I kind of thought everyone was like that. Anyway, after and through, actually, this is kind of interesting. So tomorrow's would have been my dad's birthday, and my mom is 93 now, and he would have been 96. So it's kind of apropos that we're talking today because I was daddy's little girl. And I'm glad, though, that my father wasn't alive. He died about 26 years ago, so he didn't see what is going on with my mother. But regardless of any of that, after my mother became ill, and she was still living at home and functioning, there was a major shift for us. in our relationship, or for me. I don't know that she ever changed or anything really was different for her, but out of that, I just fell in love with her. While my father was ill and dying, it took 9 years, but he had a horrible death. I mean, 9 months. I flew down. She lived in Florida, which she still does. And there were always some good times with her that we would bond with each other. But then we'd go back to our old ways. Mm-hmm. So the relationship, after she got ill, and you know, some people I have heard with the disease become angry or depressed, act out. And in my mom's case, she became sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
I said she became like a Buddha. She would say things that were so inspiring, and I don't remember her being like that growing up in my teen years or even when I first got married in my early years. So our relationship just changed, or for me, my relationship with her just totally transformed. And like I said, I fell in love with her unconditionally.
That's beautiful. It's, you know, everybody's relationship, like you said, is a little bit different. And so it's nice when you hear those stories, when sometimes people's personalities do change with dementia. And when you've had a road that's not been so nice to hoe, and then all of a sudden, you know, you just get this gift through illness. It's nice that you can accept that. Some people don't. Some people are still angry that they didn't have maybe a relationship growing up that they wanted, but you were able to look beyond that, so that's beautiful. I wanted to ask you, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say to you, so I spent many years in a support group with adult children, mm-hmm. who had a parent, and there were a lot of women in the group, didn't have to be, and mm-hmm. some of them became really upset and angry that they lost their best friend, the opposite, that their mm-hmm. mother was their best friend, that their mother was there if they became a single parent or whatever things went on in their life, the first person they wanted to speak to about anything, challenges, problems, something happy would be their mother. And then mm-hmm. they felt that they did not have that relationship. So for them, there was a loss. And mm-hmm. it's kind of interesting. And for me, there was a gain of wanting to be with my mother more and speak to my mother more.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, everybody's journey is just a hair different. And we really have to appreciate and accept that and understand that. For you, you know, you were in New York, and I believe your mom's down in Florida. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yeah. My brother lives near her, so there is a family member there. But yes,
okay.
I'm in New York. She's Florida.
Okay. So you're what we call a long distance caregiver or care partner or care companion, whatever verbiage the people in our audience are using. What was that like for you, or what is that like? Because the journey is still going on for you, to not be able to be there all the time.
I went through many. Well, first, let me say this: I tried to get my mother to move back to New York. And she was not willing. And at the time, she certainly, you know, she had the disease, but she certainly was, we'd say, independent. She was still living at home. She didn't even mm-hmm. have any caregivers in the beginning, you know, outside help. And she said, I don't want to leave Florida. It's my home, and this mm-hmm. is where I want to be. At the time when we felt, then we did get caregivers, different shifts, and then 12 hours, and then when she needed 24, we felt. And I did go to look at nursing homes in New York, which was very difficult trying to get in here.
Mm-hmm.
with most of the nursing homes, which is pretty much probably in every state, they only wanted her in a dementia ward, and they didn't have beds. I am actually still on a waiting list, and my mother's been in a nursing home for 4 years. Because till a bed, we know that people live a lot longer with the disease, and so beds don't open, and they don't have, it's the facilities, it's not like they have floors of dementia units. So it was really hard for me to bring her here. If at that point it would have been, we'd have to, you know, medicate her to get her on a plane, and she wouldn't have really known the difference, but I couldn't even get her in anything. I went through a lot of emotions about that and feelings, and again, in my support group, which was very helpful, the support leader who, you know, can't become a support leader in the group, to lead a group unless you have had a parent that had the disease and passed away with it within after two years of your mourning. So it was really brought, or she felt that it was more what I wanted and maybe not necessarily best for my mother. My mother used to being in Florida for the warm weather all those years. Was she going to be here? They could take her outside more. Here it's colder. You know, was it me being for my selfish needs? So when it was analyzed and discussed with my brother lives near her. We decided, my brother, myself, she couldn't really be included in the decision, not capable of, is that it would be best to leave her there. And I think whether she was here or there, I think there's a lot of guilt that can arise in a child, especially I'm speaking for myself, of putting a parent in a nursing home, especially when you knew their wish was never to go in a nursing home. So I had that to deal with, along with then the long distance. But I used to, and I'm going to say used to, I would fly down every 6 to 12 weeks and see her. And every time that I went, it was very difficult. I'd be so upset going to see her, and then I'd be even more upset when I left her. But as a long-distance caregiver, and it's not because I'm a female, my brother's a male, because he's been wonderful through this whole thing, was that everything that had to get done in the nursing home, making sure my mother was taken care of, I called and spoke to the head nurse, and everyone knew me, and made sure, did her teeth get clean, was the podiatrist here, et cetera, how she, you know, everything was being handled on a phone call. So that was, and we were very fortunate to get her into a wonderful, wonderful, caring, loving nursing home. So, but before that, when she was at home, there was an episode where the medics called me. It was the first time my mother never wandered, but she went out and sat on the stoop where she lived in Florida, where she lived for over 20 years. And instead of like a neighbor calling and bringing her back in her home, they called, I think, the fire department or police, and who went to her home and called me. You know, so things like that were, oh my, and I couldn't just jump in a car. Or if she had a UTI the first time, you know, it was, there were things, or how hurt she fell. There were moments like that of really hard being a long-distance caregiver.
I bet. And for those of you that don't know, a UTI is a urinary tract infection, or like a bladder infection. But with a person with dementia, they can cause just really bizarre symptoms and stuff, and sometimes hard to diagnose. You know, how...
Hallucinations? A UTI?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's something, yeah, I mean, hallucinations, you don't know what's happening with them. Very scary the first time, until, and Yeah, it's really important for people to understand that what can happen on, with a urinary tract infection.
Yeah.
It's amazing how drastically their personalities change.
Yeah, the first time my mom had one, I thought she was overdosed. I mean, I thought they were just giving her way too much medication. She couldn't hold her head up. Her eyes were rolling back in her head, everything. And I was so angry. And I'm like, what are you giving her? And they're like, oh, I'm sure it's a UTI. And I'm like, no way. No way could that be, a UTI. And sure enough, it was. And I was shocked.
Yeah. We got used to the symptoms before. So I would call my mother as a long-distance caregiver, when she was healthy, I called her maybe once a week only to hear her tell me, why aren't you calling? You never call me. But after she got ill, I called her every single day. And the interesting thing was when she became so chatty and wouldn't stop talking, I would say to the caregivers, get her urine tested. I feel she's getting a UTI. And that was like, became for us a signal that it was happening. And 99 and 9/10 of the time, it ended up being that, and we threw her on an antibiotic.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So even as a long-distance caregiver, emotionally, I missed her. I wanted to see her. I wanted to see her. She was still at home. She was still a lot more aware of everything. So, and then what's the good part of it is not, this is hard to say, but I'm going to say it. People that are caregivers and see their loved one every day in this condition is got to be very, very difficult. I could hang up the phone and go on with my life, but when it's there in front of you all the time, it's got to be heart-wrenching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I think everyone deals with it a little bit different. For me, I found so much joy in being with her that I didn't go down that path, and that she taught me so much. But not everybody gets to that space. To be able to do that. Lisa, I wanted to ask you about your change in your relationship with your mom. You said growing up was tough and you kind of saw a different woman. How did that transform, and was that just one day a light switch went off and she changed and you recognized it, or was it something that happened slowly over time? And maybe you could give us some examples.
Okay. I have a really close friend who I wanted her mother to be my mother. And she actually said to me one day, maybe after my relationship with my mother, I felt totally changed, that maybe my mother was always like that, this wonderful Buddhist person. And I just wasn't willing to look at it. Which I always thought was kind of interesting. I don't think anything happened other than because she, it all happened when she got diagnosed with Alzheimer's, that I then started to call her every single day, and it was phone calls that I started to write down what she said, because I really felt like I was talking to somebody, someone who's like a philosophy major. There was this whole outlook of life that she would share with me that I don't remember her being like that.
Interesting.
Yes, it was amazing. My husband would come home and I'd say, you wouldn't believe what my mother said. It was always, I can't believe it. It was these words of wisdom that came out of her mouth. There was a love and a joy. And, you asked me for an example, and I remember saying to my mother, books, like I would interview her. So, Ma, but I remember asking her, Ma, is it, when she'd say to me, like, I don't remember something. And I'd say to her, but do you remember how much I love you? And she would say, of course I do. But I would then ask, what is it like not to remember something? And my mother's answer to me consistently, because she wouldn't remember that I always asked her that, right, was always whatever, even though I can't remember, whatever I know I did yesterday had to be lovely. So I did not see my mother that way. Not that she was a complainer and would, it's not that she would say my day wasn't nice or I'm miserable. I never heard that out of her. But the other flip side of the coin of hearing her come from joy and happiness. And she really got into always saying the most important thing is that my children are happy and healthy. And I know that she always felt that as a parent. As a parent, we all want that for our children. But she would vocalize it.
Wow, interesting. Now, you have written two books. The first was My Mom, My Hero, which was a number one Amazon bestseller in the memoirs category. And you have now written a second book called Letter to My Mother, or to My Mom. And what made you decide to write a second book, Lisa?
Well, the first book ended in 2012. I took it up to there. I have a blog that a lot of people read internationally. I have a lot of followers on that. And I would get a lot of questions of where is your mother at? Or people would send me messages, emails. Where is your mother now? What's going on with your mother? How's your mother? So I also was, so that was really the reason I did the second book, was, and it is my last and final book, was because even where I end in this book, my feelings about my mother have shifted a little. But I put the second book together and have gotten a lot of responses on that, which was dealing, the first book is really a lot of my conversations with my mother and things my mother said. In book two, there's very little. It's like it starts off pretty much when we decide she has to be in a nursing home and as she is disappearing more and more. And my feelings, I think the first one also I came for myself, more of my cup is half full and so grateful and thankful about my relationship and having my mother no matter what's going on, no matter what she doesn't remember, where my second book dives more into my feelings and my wishes after putting her in a nursing home and dealing with putting her in a nursing home, the guilt, and but what would be best for her. And like I said, because we were very fortunate to find a wonderful facility for her, because I'm sure, Laura, you've heard from people that that's not always the case.
Yeah. That guilt is tough. You know, I always told my mom we wouldn't put her in a nursing home, but then actually my mom was the one who decided she wanted to move into the nursing home because my dad ended up having to live there, took a fall, and just, you know, that was really the beginning of the end for him. And so that transition made it a little bit easier for us as a family because she one day was just so clear, and it's amazing with this disease how they can become and have such rich clarity at moments. And she just said, you know, I don't, we've been together 49 and a half years and I'm not leaving him now. I'll never forget those words. And so we made that work for her, but it also had to work for us as a family in terms of, you know, the nursing home wanted to put her right in with Dad. And I said, no, she doesn't have to watch him die or we'll lose them both, you know.
Right.
And so that kind of threw me for a loop, too, that as a family member, it really, right upon admission, I had to be a strong advocate and fight, no, she needs to be on this floor where it's more social and she has to have one activity and one meal every day so she's acclimated. And the rest of the time I'll bring her up to Dad. But it opened my eyes that I had to be the one to say that. You know, in the process. So we were lucky as a family in terms of that guilt. But I hear that from so many people. You know, what a difficult move that is to make, because you make these promises when people aren't at the same ability as when they need to be placed. And it really is the best.
I don't know if you really want to get into what I'm going to say right now, but so there's two things. So the first book was stirred on about so many people writing me all the time and like saying how they are learning from things that I said about what they're going through with their parents. The second book is that a lot of people have reached out to me and thanked me for what I have said that they have never said, but it's exactly how they are feeling. And the part of the discussion that I said was given where you just said about, you know, you promised your mother you never want to put her in a nursing home, but then she said she thought it was best for her. So my mother never wanted to be in a nursing home. But the step further that I was going to say, I have one child, and I have said to my son, because I happen to believe in death with dignity, and I'm a little involved with that, although in New York it's called choice of life. And if someone believes in that, and if you live in a state in America that has legalized that in the seven states, they don't recognize that you're dying from Alzheimer's. So you couldn't get I'm blanking on the word.
It's like assisted suicide, are you talking?
Yes. So I have asked my son, we have sat and saying, since my mother has, I hope I never get disease, but my mother's younger brother passed away rather quickly from Alzheimer's, is I have asked my son, my husband knows, like, to take me out of the United States. Now, will they ever do it or live to my wishes? I don't know. But because of how I feel about quality of life at certain points.
Yeah, and everybody, you know, everybody feels different on that. And I remember we did a two-hour show years back on that, and it was very interesting because
I tuned into that. Yes, it was.
Yeah, because we had people with dementia. We had different care partners. We had a doctor. We had it was a real diverse group. And I'll never forget at the very end, they asked me, well, Lori, what would you do? And I remember my answer was this: I'm a girl who wants choice, and so I'm for that. I'm for choice. But I could honestly say I wouldn't have given up a moment with my mom in 30 years. I wouldn't. I learned so much from her. And so then in that, and again, that was really my answer. I just left it there. And to this day, that's really where it's at, because I don't think anybody really knows until they're in those shoes. And some people will have a religious beliefs will guide them. I think that's fine. But I think we have to learn to not judge others' decisions, that people are trying to make the best possible decisions for their life, their lifestyle, their family and friends. And I'll never forget Dina Dotson, who took that choice. And she, you know, it was actually the way she did it was such a beautiful example, because she she told all of her, you know, she discussed it with her family, and she brought in, or I should say people came into her life, her friends, her family, like 3 months prior. And she was so happy. She was just beaming. She got to connect and she got to say goodbye. And, you know, there's beauty in that, too. And I think we have to be respectful of choice.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
So last year, so I get as a long-distance caregiver, but things in my life have shifted. So the last 4 years, I was able to spend my husband put all his vacation. I work from home on my own. I'm self-employed. So my husband put all his vacation time in. We have spent 4 weeks with my mother in Florida, which became so much more meaningful than these quick trips, because I would, you know, even though the aides and my brother visited her once a week now, he used to go more often. But as the disease has progressed and he has his emotions that she doesn't know who he is, but, you know, he she calls him this, whatever, his own feelings, I respect that. So I get to spend quality time with her when I see how things, you know, when I saw her every single day, how she became, there were some off days or moments, whatever, but became more aware. Alive. I saw the joy with her singing. It was very special. But last year, I went there, and after I was there for day two, my mother became so ill that we were really sure it was the end, and they put her on hospice, and she pulled through, but the disease really progressed onward. I mean, she speaks a little. She can't walk anymore. She's now she was in this Mary Walker. She's confined in a wheelchair. Once in a while, I mean, anything she says really doesn't make sense, but it makes sense if she talks to you. There is no more with the music. Her eyes are closed, and I see a tap her feet a little, but the one beautiful thing that I have is the hand holding, the touch, the what you feel within that. But I am again saying something now is, so when she was like that for the month before I knew she was going to pull through, and I'm not a religious person, but I do believe in God, and I did pray to God every day that she would just go to sleep. So this year, which was good for me, is that I stopped praying, and it is what it is, and there's nothing I can do. As long as she, you know, as long as I feel in my heart that she's not in pain and suffering, when it's her time, it'll be her time. So there was a lot of emotions for me with that, different kind of emotions.
Oh, sure. That's, and there's so many emotions on this journey, you know, so many twists and turns, and there's, you know, what they call ambiguous loss, where we go through multiple types of losses. But then, like you found, there were so many gains and joys through the process as well.
Wonderful,
And I think so often people don't talk about the good things that can happen with our relationships and with our lives during this. Was there like one or two like life lessons that your mom taught you about life through this journey?
Well, I think I said it was like, you know, you just want your children to be healthy and happy, and that's all that's really important. So I think that's probably the biggest life journey. That's probably it. The other thing, you know, I'm going to just go back for a second about long-distance caregiver, but even if you're someone that lives in the same town with your parent or whoever, loved one, is I cherish watching, and they really make me smile and laugh. I have videos that I've taken of my mother, even this year, where she's much further along with the disease, where you capture a few moments of such sweetness and such innocence and a giggle. You know, it comes through, like the other times her eyes are closed, but being able to capture, being lucky enough to capture something on video, and I go back a few years ago and watch, I just love them. So as a long-distance caregiver, for me, I mean, for anyone, they should try to capture some wonderful moments with their loved one while they can. I love watching these. I love watching her spirit, her joie de vivre of life, which sounds kind of crazy, that I didn't see when she was healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I get that. I have several videos of my mom on YouTube, too. And when I'm having a really bad day, that's where I go, you know, to just kind of find some peace. Because I look at her and I see the simplicity in the world that she lives in now. And I see things I think I probably didn't find before. I was moving too fast. I was too busy. Like when you even said the word giggle, my heart just kind of got soft and I could hear my mom giggle and how much happiness that gives me, you know, to be able to see the glint in her eyes, or, you know, when she was nonverbal, her toes or her hands tapping to the music, she was still engaged on a very kind of minute level in compared to, you know, the rest of the busy world, but in a more, I think, powerful level too. She's more connected to the world. Is a feeling in the sense that I always got was that their connection to simplicity and beauty seemed richer, and that they were teaching us that.
That's interesting, the connection, what you're saying with the connection with the world. I mean, there's things that we don't know about the disease because they can't tell us, but what really goes on, But I said giggle, and then you just brought up giggle. And so in March, where in between, so I had this really cute little video of her, and we caught her one day, you know, and the nurse, I call and I speak to the nurses still all the time, and I say, please tell my mom, her daughter Lisa from New York, I'm trying to have her recall, send her love. And they always tell me they will, whether they do or they don't, it makes me feel better. But so and they've told me before, oh, your mom, she's chatty Ruthie today. She doesn't stop talking. We don't understand what she's saying, but she just keeps talking. So we caught her a few times. We caught her a few times like that. And this one time, she's going on, and I have this on a video. So this was in March, and she's going on about some guy. And the whole time, she never did say that my name, which she normally does, or connect that I was her daughter. But I know that she knows that. I know that she knows that. I know there's a voice, there's a touch, I know she knows. So I keep interrupting her on the video. Ma, I'm your daughter Lisa. So fine. She just is talking. She couldn't care less. She's telling her story. She couldn't care who was sitting there. She's in the wheelchair. I'm sitting on her bed. And then all of a sudden she turns to me. I go, and one time she connects. She says, really? I'm your daughter, Lisa. Really? And she puts a big smile on her face, and then she goes back talking about some guy. but there is still, I still can get those moments. My brother just sent me a video of her with me, and it was really cute too. And then when they asked her in the video, what's your daughter's name? And she goes, Lisa. But the whole time I'm there, you know. But I still can get a joy out of it.
Yeah.
So that's good. And a giggle.
Well, and you know, sometimes it can be that they don't recognize us because we're grown up and they're back in time looking
yes.
for a little Lisa.
Yes.
Yep. You know,
exactly.
And so,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting. That whole name thing, I know, can be so painful for people. I know what really was for my older brother, especially, just had a hard time understanding how she could forget him after 50 years. And, you know, I remember telling him, you know, Mark, she's in a different space and time. It's before she was married and so before she had kids, and she's calling mm-hmm. you Chuck, which is her brother who she loves,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so you are safe and a loved person to her. And, you know, if you go look in the mirror, you look just like Chuck when he was younger, so it makes perfect sense why she's
but with my
Chuck.
Mother, if my mother says I'm her mother,
uh-huh.
or, I mean, I take it as a compliment in the sense of it's someone that she loved and adored, so it's okay.
Yep, yeah. My
I mean,
mom
they mix up their words, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
my mom,
it was your brother that was upset. Right, you said it was your
mm-hmm.
brother. So
yep.
So one time, it's kind of crazy because we go through our own emotions, and my brother was taking me to the airport, and I was, like, very upset. Like, I said to you, I get upset when I see my mother, and then I get upset when I'm leaving my mother. Like, when I'm seeing her, I'm going through all these emotions. What's she going to be like? Is she going to know me? And when I'm leaving, I don't want to leave her. So he's taking me to the airport when I go for trips in between, and I share with him, like, it's so hard sometimes being with mommy, and it, mm-hmm. it hurts when she, you know, like, doesn't, like, recognize who I am. And he
mm-hmm.
turns, you know, in the car, he's driving, and he says to me, that's why I don't go there as frequently now. It really upsets me. And his
mm-hmm.
wife told me. So it's like I looked at him like I never took his feelings into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just never thought, what is he going through? It wasn't that I didn't know. I knew he had feelings. But his wife told me that he tells her that my mother, he knows that my mother's angry at him. And that's why
mm-hmm.
she whatever. So we all children with a parent go through things. And I
yeah.
used to think my mother favored my brother when we were growing up. I was daddy's little girl.
Uh-huh.
And mother's supposed to be closer with their sons. I don't know. So anyway.
Yeah, it's funny our perceptions of things and how they can change. With the times and stuff. Well, I can't believe, gosh, we only have about 10 minutes left here. What do you really want for your mom in the time ahead?
A year ago, I would tell you for her to go to sleep. What do I really, really want for her? I was going to say for her to be happy, you know, for her to have peace. And
mm-hmm.
not suffer.
Mhm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that, you know, we should look at for everyone. For me, it was, you know, I came up with my memory chip: is she safe? Is she happy? Is she pain free? And those were kind of my three goals because I was
mm-hmm.
getting into my checklist stuff a little bit too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Why, in ramping up, why do you think some mothers and daughters have strained relationships? Because it is very common for people.
See, as you say it, I don't want to really believe that, but I know it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, but see, I look on the other side, look at all these mothers and daughters that are so close. You know, with a child, with a brother or sister, we'd say civil rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
With a mother and a daughter, maybe what I said was, I mean, nothing is true, everything is generalization, but I've always heard that mothers are closer to sons and daughters are closer to fathers.
Mm-hmm.
If that is true, then maybe somewhere there. In my particular case, I thought my mother might have been a little jealous of my relationship with my father
mm-hmm.
because I remember her friend saying, oh, when Lisa walks in the room, Audie, my father's name was Audie, Arthur, Audie's face lights up. I don't know. So somewhere, what would it be if it's with children's, you know, a civil rivalry, what a sibling rivalry, what could there be that? I mean,
yeah,
maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. I know when, after I graduated high school, I got closer to my dad. And so he and I would like go out for lunch and my mom was working and my mom got so jealous. So every time I went out to lunch with my dad, I had to go out to dinner with my mom.
Huh.
And
it was
really interesting. There was this competition. And up until that point, I mean, my mom and I had always, you know, had a really close relationship. And I thought I did with my dad, but my bond with my mom was even stronger. But there was this jealousy that occurred, or that's how I would label it, you know. And so I just tried to make sure that things were even, because I really enjoyed getting to know my dad, you know, on that level as well.
Mm-hmm.
With
mm-hmm.
that. Now, I do want to make sure that people are able to find your books. They're on Amazon. And again, the titles, your newest book here is To My Mom, My Hero. And then
Letter
you
to
also.
My Mom.
Have,
yeah, Letter to My Mom.
Yep. And then My Mom, My Hero is your other book. And you can get those in a package deal or you can buy them separately there. If you pull up either one, if you just pull down a little bit on your screen, you'll see that you can get a package deal with the two of the books there. And would really encourage you to check that out. And also, you know, go to Lisa's blog, which is Mommy Hero Blog Spot. mommyhero.blogspot.com and check out some of her writings. I think you will. I know that you have always been really good at responding to every comment, and I know
every
that you get
comment,
a lot of interaction.
Every comment.
Yep.
But I'll interject real quickly that for me, it's a commitment to myself. Knowing if I can make any difference or have anyone share whatever's going on in their life, that's all that matters to me, because we are all in this together.
Yeah. Well, it's so healing when you can share. You know, I still get people who will comment on some of my stuff, or people will submit poetry, and I'm just amazed at how people love to read, especially poetry. And how much it gets shared. I think because mm-hmm. people know that piece is really, really heartfelt. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, the information that we can learn from one another, what worked, what didn't work, what feelings to expect, how to cope, how to find support, all of those things, you know, you can get online. Because sometimes it's hard if you're a full-time person caring for a loved one, a lot of times you can't leave your home. And people, and it's a way to be able to get a respite and to better understand the disease on a broader picture and to inspire you to look at it a little bit different or try different techniques. We all have so much to share. Anything that you'd like to say in wrapping up to our audience, Lisa?
Well, I think I said is that everyone out there, like, we're not to feel alone. We're all in this together, and I think there's a lot of support on the, I hate to say Facebook, but a lot of groups out there. You know, when I read what people write me or write comments on to other things that people share, is like we need each other to be able to support each other in whatever we're going through.
Yep, I agree. And there's a lot of wonderful groups. I just am amazed at how many have popped up and how many like subgroups and things that there are, like Harry Urban's group with the forget-me-nots and in memory people out there, you know, have all these different subgroups of resources, and they do game nights and they have dinner together, and Harry puts together a cookbook, you know, once a year from
he's amazing,
the members.
Harry. He inspires me. Amazing.
I know. And he, you know, heard from, you know, a Hispanic population that they wanted to belong to the group, but they couldn't understand. And Harry's like, well, we'll find a translation bar. We'll fix that.
Fabulous.
You know,
fabulous.
And now he's hooked up with Italy and doing work with them. And, you know, Harry Urban has been living with dementia for 12 years now. And he is just a great, great advocate, like so many others out there, giving voice and helping us see what it looks like to live gracefully with the disease.
Yes, he does. Oh, my God. He's amazing.
Yeah. Have you ever met Harry in person?
No, not in person. Nope.
Oh.
Well, maybe on a podcast with someone. When there was pictures, I think, but not literally in person. No, but we converse a little. So I tell him all the time how much he inspires me.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure to meet him a couple of times. He was on the cruise, and then he came out.
I was going to say, you went on the cruise, right?
Yeah. We went on our dementia-friendly cruise, but the one thing that everybody says when they meet Harry is they're shocked at how tall he is. You know, because we always.
Is
virtually,
he tall?
Yeah, virtually we see him sitting in a chair and
yeah.
they don't know how tall he is.
How
yeah,
tall
he's
is
tall.
He?
Guy. Oh,
how
I
tall?
I bet he I bet he's
guess.
Probably 6'1", maybe
wow.
even 6'2". Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I could be wrong, but that would be my guess. Yeah. There, so. I know, it's just kind of funny. Well, in wrapping up, I'm going to give a shout-out to a couple other organizations, the American Senior Magazine, which is a wonderful, wonderful magazine. They are a lifestyle magazine for seniors with topics ranging from nostalgia, health, and wellness. They do interviews and spotlight older, notable Americans. Calendar Cards, which is a memory system. And you can go to Calendar Cards. It's just instead of C, you put in a K for calendar and cards. They both start with a K. And you can also find more information about them if you go to memorycafedirectory.com, memorycafedirectory.com, because they have organized this lovely, lovely directory of memory cafes for the U.S. They sponsor that. And if you have a memory cafe you want put in, Dave won't charge you. He'll just help you get it up and running. If you are looking for one, you know, within any of the states, it's very easy to use. So check that out. And then I always like to give a shout out to the Purple Table Reservation. We are just hoping and praying that more restaurants come on board, because she's got a great training system all set up so people with dementia can be out in the community and maybe sit in a area of a restaurant where it's a little quieter, have a staff and a wait staff who is trained in terms of weeding down choices. You know, I mean, I can't even remember half the time all the types of dressings that are available, you know, when you go out there, or they start spewing, you know, all the different beverages available. And so they weed that down a little bit more. And you can go to purpletables.com to find out more information there. And last, I will just shout out to the Alzheimer's Research and Prevention Foundation that takes a holistic approach to dementia. So they look at diet and exercise, and they've got a great meditation and so forth. So with that, we'll go ahead and close. And again, please check out Lisa Hirsch. Go to her blog, mommyhero.blogspot.com, mommyhero.blogspot.com. Or go to Amazon, and you can just Google Lisa Hirsch or her books. So there's a link right on the radio show or the blog with that information. Thank you so much, Lisa, for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I love you, Laura. You're wonderful.
Okay. Love you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Talk soon, everyone.